Hello, everyone. This is Michael Ann Conley, and you're listening to Habits into Health. In this podcast, you'll experience the unique Habits into Health perspective that brings the body to the foreground in the path to change. If you're new to this show, welcome aboard. You'll get a chance to practice this approach of drawing on your bodily experience to help shape your changes. And as those of you who've listened before know, I call this letting your body lead so that your mind doesn't have to. And you'll hear information from other sources from time to time, because my goal is to give you more choices in changing behaviors that create problems. Lately, we've been talking about hunger and anger as factors in HALT, H-A-L-T, which is a reminder that letting yourself get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired could derail you off your path to change. When you're dealing, with your own struggles in the midst of life, slipping back into old habits could only be one moment away. Recognizing the signs of this can help you prevent relapse, however you define that. Today, we'll enter into what the lonely in HALT is all about. But first, let's take a moment to help you access yourself in a sensory way. Sometimes in Habits into Health, we just take a minute or two for this experiential exercise, and sometimes longer. It's important because your physical experience of yourself is your source for recognizing your own truth about you. And this includes your ability to sense the signals that old habits could be sneaking their way back in. In today's exercise, I'm going to invite you to do a very simple thing. Just lift your shoulders towards your ears. And just notice how much you lift your shoulders. There's no right or wrong way to do this, but noticing tells you what your definition of the action is. It gives you a baseline from which you can start. Perhaps you've lifted your shoulders so that they almost touch your ears. Maybe you drew them up just a little bit, or somewhere in between. Whatever distance you did this, just notice. And be attentive. What else is involved in lifting your shoulders this amount? Do you engage your elbows, for instance? Do you push up? Do you stiffen in your neck? Do you compress in your mouth? Or focus your eyes in a particular way? Do you make yourself still in your chest? Or maybe you experience a pulling up in your diaphragm, that muscle above your belly button that helps you breathe. Now slowly drop your shoulders, like you're walking down one stair at a time. And notice what happens in your shoulders doing this. What happens in the neighborhood? By that I mean your neck or your throat, your upper chest, your arms, or your back. As you do this, do you recognize any other adjustments or responses in other aspects of yourself? That could mean thoughts or images, sensations, memories, even feeling cool or warm or tense or loose. In doing these exercises, this happens. Not only recognizing practical things in different physical locations, but also attitude and emotional stance or your thinking process. Sitting with yourself for a moment or two, notice the effect of this simple movement, lifting and then dropping your shoulders. Investing in yourself is giving yourself permission. It's you giving permission to you to experience your own sensations. And like anything, the more you do it, the more you begin to notice. The more you do it, the better you get at it. And what makes this valuable is that those behaviors that we call habits, the things we do routinely, they're hardly noticed, especially if we don't find them problematic. Like, for instance, whether you brush your teeth before you wash your face or afterwards may not matter one bit to you or anyone else. You get to where you just do it and you don't think about it. The same is true for behaviors that do cause problems. They become routine as well. Lifting and dropping your shoulders, like we did today, is an opportunity to practice being attentive in a particular way to a common behavior so that you can notice how you do what you do. It's holographic in a way, in the sense that how you engage in this small exercise can guide you to recognizing how you engage in other behaviors as well. Using relatively benign physical actions, like lifting and dropping your shoulders, and noting how you use yourself there helps you disengage from a tendency that we have in our world to be pulled into our stories of why we are who we are and why we do what we do. The stories might be interesting, but they also distract us from recognizing what we do and how we do it, which is much more fundamental when it comes to behavior change than the stories we tell ourselves. If you find yourself intrigued by this approach to self-knowing, I invite you to visit habitsintohealth.com and click on the podcast menu to listen to more Habits Into Health podcasts, or visit other menus on the site. You can also find links on the website to follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and to subscribe to our latest updates. My name is Michael Ann Conley, and I'm the host of this show. Today, we're continuing to explore the concept of HALT, H-A-L-T, which is a reminder to be attentive to whether you are hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, because these states make us vulnerable to slipping back into the very habits we want to say goodbye to. This episode's focus is on lonely, a state we can fall into whether we're around a lot of other people or not. Many of the people I've supported over the years as a therapist and health educator have found HALT to be a great reality check. It helps them recognize when they're most vulnerable to relapse, because these obvious experiences are a signal that something is out of sorts underneath. The pattern of loneliness is tricky because it can show up in various ways, but the key is isolation. At its simplest, the lonely in HALT reflects our tendency to kind of pull away from others when we're preoccupied, worried, or even feeling blue. I mean, have you ever been in a situation where you wanted support, but you didn't know how to ask for it, or you felt embarrassed about bringing it up, so you don't say anything? I'm thinking about someone I know. Let's call her Maria. And she stutters when she's under stress. As you can imagine, it often ends up being a self-fulfilling prophecy, because when she needs to talk, say to her supervisor at work, about something important, she will often stress herself out, being worried that she'll start stuttering. And then, as you can guess, she'll often end up stuttering. It actually took a few months for Maria to bring this up. She felt so embarrassed about it. And I asked, is there anyone else you've talked to about this feeling? And her answer was no, even though the mom and the rest of the family knew that she stuttered. It certainly wasn't a secret in the family. She didn't turn to them for solace. In fact, she used to talk with one of her sisters, but she stopped doing that. She would say, I don't want to bother her anymore. She can't help me. I have to take care of this myself. And sometimes she stuttered when she said that. And certainly, she had to do something for herself, but not necessarily by herself. And one of the side effects of not talking about her dilemma is she ended up spending less time with her family and with some of her friends as well. She would go visit, but she'd leave earlier. She'd talk about mundane things, like weather talk, but she created distance otherwise. I wonder if you've ever done this too. Kept yourself apart out of your own discomfort with something that's going on within you or in some part of your life. Have you ever been like Maria? Isolating yourself rather than reaching out for support? Or sometimes just not reaching out for social contact and pleasurable experiences? When Maria did this, she created her own loneliness. Her loneliness didn't just happen. And her isolation didn't help her learn to manage her internal stress more effectively, which could help alleviate the stuttering. Coming to therapy was one way that she began to break through her habit of isolating and withdrawing from her support network. On one level, she had gotten caught in the story. I'm afraid that I'll stutter. People won't want to be around me. They'll feel embarrassed for me, or they'll be impatient, or I'll look stupid. There were memories of being shamed because of her stuttering. And so she made links between those past events and what she just knew were future probabilities. Staying away from people was her solution. After all, her dog didn't mind if she stuttered, but it also took a toll. So much of the time, we choose solutions that work in the moment, or maybe even for quite a while. Isolating created protection for Maria. She didn't have to deal with other people. She didn't have to deal with how she stressed herself internally through her own self-talk, or how she responded to external stressors, which are just a part of life. So there was a relief in the short term, or intermittently when she felt too pressured in her life. Because she didn't stutter all the time, just when she felt under a lot of stress. But eventually, she would collapse under the weight of her loneliness. Keeping yourself apart is a way of protecting yourself. But in the long run, who are you protecting? It might be just some part of you who finds that the pain of the past is more comfortable because it's known than the unknown that's always coming in the future. But really, keeping possibilities at bay doesn't prevent the future from arriving, does it? Tomorrow's going to come. The real question is, how will you meet it? As I said earlier, the halt frame is a really effective and quick reality check. Using halt can give you a way to enter any aspect of your current life where you've become activated or you're feeling out of sorts. So, for example, let's say that you realize that being worried has led you to isolate. Recognizing your feelings of loneliness can be an early warning system that you could be vulnerable to slipping back into that behavior that you decided you were going to say goodbye to. It could be an alert that the recovery you've already developed is softening and that you're only one temptation away from relapse. It could be as simple as the realization that you've gotten off track. Using halt can help you create a concrete plan for specific actions to steer yourself back with any of the tools that you've developed. One tool is to step back from loneliness by making a phone call, either to someone who cares or to someone who needs caring from you. It could involve taking a walk around the block or walking into a self-help meeting. Halt is a self-caring reminder to support you in stabilizing your habit change. It's certainly something that I use in my life, and I invite you to consider it as well. It's only one thing that you can put into your plan for changing a habit or sustaining new behaviors or growing yourself into your best future. In Habits into Health, we focus on giving you more choices in making the changes you want to make, regardless of the habit you're dealing with. Because growing yourself is a universal option that everyone can choose. If you catch yourself saying, "I have a bad habit," it might just be that your habit has a grip on you. And of course, you feel bad about yourself because of it. Come to habitsintohealth.com and request a small self-assessment questionnaire on the website to begin your exploration. This is Michael Ann Conley, and you've been listening to Habits into Health. I support you in turning your old habits around into healthy possibilities for your future. Thanks for joining me.